Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. In 2020, the CDC said that one in 54 kids in the United States is diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Boys are four times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls. And parents who have a child with ASD have a 2 to 18% chance of having a second child who is also affected. My guest today is Millicent Santos. Millie is a mom to two young ASD adults, a parent advocate, case manager at the ARC Baltimore, and a graduate of the ARC of Maryland's Partners in Policymaking program. Please join me in welcoming Millicent Santos. Hi, Millie.
Hi, good morning, Dr. Carol.
Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Well, as you did mention, I am a mom to two young men who have autism spectrum disorder. They are both in college now. They're both going to Towson University. My eldest one, Virgil, is taking nursing. And my youngest one, David, is taking information technology. It took a lot of blood, sweat, tears, and hard work on mine and my husband's part for them to become as independent as they are now. I graduated with a degree in communication arts in the Philippines, so I had no idea about the IDD community. I work in the intellectual and developmental disability community now because of the work that I was doing for my boys. The advocacy that I was doing for my sons led me to start working in this field, and I am currently enjoying it. It is very rewarding, and working with them makes you feel very grateful for the life that you have, because we take a lot of things for granted.
Absolutely.
Simple things like walking, eating on your own, talking, driving to work. These are things that for people with disability is very, very hard.
Right.
For us, it comes second nature. So that's why my job feels very, very rewarding. I love it.
Right.
So I try to learn everything I can in this field because, of course, you know, I didn't go to school for it.
Right. And we're so lucky to have, you know, individuals like you helping others navigate through the autism world. I'd like to ask you, when were you aware that Virgil and David have autism?
When Virgil was three,
uh-huh.
I noticed that we couldn't, he's talking, but we couldn't establish a two-way communication. If I ask him, are you hungry? He would just say back, are you hungry? So later on, after he got diagnosed, it was called echolalia. So
okay.
It's a very, very common behavior for kids with autism spectrum disorder. So that was my first sign, but then I let it pass. However, when David showed some weird signs as well, when he turned three, like he wouldn't talk, he would just grunt and point to the thing that he needed.
Uh-huh.
That's when I said, oh no, something's wrong. I need to bring them to the doctor. So,
okay.
You know, back in the Philippines, we don't have a lot of specialized doctors like we have here.
Uh-huh.
But I was able to find a developmental pediatrician in the De La Salle University in Das Marinas, Cavite, in the Philippines.
Uh-huh.
So after that, they were both diagnosed with ASD. I thought initially that they have ADHD. Because
okay.
During that time, you can hear in it, you can see in the television, like documentaries about kids with ADHD. But that's what I thought they had initially. But then after the diagnosis, it's like it's autism spectrum disorder. And back home, there is a bad stigma to the word autism.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can see in the movies, they portray people with autism like someone who doesn't care about their surroundings. They have their own little bubble. They have their own little world. So it was very hard for me to accept. And it's not just one kid. It's the two of them.
Yeah.
So I had to get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. So we went, I forgot the name of this hospital, but there's another specialized developmental pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And she confirmed the initial diagnosis that the kids have autism spectrum disorder. So back then, my husband was already in the United States and we were still back home. I called him. I didn't even care. It's already nighttime in the U.S. and it's daytime where we were. I just cried. And then after venting and crying, we started planning out what we need to do.
Right.
So I quit my job. I did research after research after research. And it all, there is one common factor in all the research that I saw. It's early intervention.
Okay.
Early intervention meaning whatever you would do for a neurotypical child, like the discipline, the loving, everything, you have to do to them first. You do, should not feel sorry that they have it or give them preference because of it.
Mm-hmm.
No. Especially the discipline part, because you do not want them to grow up feeling pampered or spoiled because you felt sorry for them initially. And actually, in fact, I deal with a lot of people like that now in where I'm working.
Uh-huh.
A lot of adults that because their parents felt sorry for them when they were younger, they forgot to discipline. So now they act like spoiled brats. Entitled, you know, you can't feel, but you can't help but feel sorry for them, especially if they're your child. But then
right.
You have to think objectively. I have to think what's best for them.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Those were the things that I noticed that prompted me to get them tested, and I am glad I got them tested.
Yeah. Well, you said so. You were in the Philippines during that time. How was the process for getting the initial evaluations? Was there a waiting list for you?
No. There wasn't. You just research like who you want to see. And someone mm-hmm. did advise me, why don't you go see a like developmental pediatrician? So
okay.
That's I researched for that in that hospital and I found one and I just made an appointment.
Hmm.
Because you know, back home, not a lot of people have insurance or you need a referral.
Right.
A specialized medical professional. So that was how it is. There was no waiting line. But the second doctor I went to, she did have a waiting list.
Okay.
Apparently, after I went to her, she has a lot of patients with the same diagnosis as the boys. That's when I found out, like, oh my God, like one in every whatever number of kids have autism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very alarming. So,
right.
And no one knows, even up to now, how a person gets it.
Exactly. Right. So when you first got the diagnosis, they gave you the evaluation and recommendations probably. Did you start certain therapies like OT or speech?
Yes. The recommendations were OT, intensive. Mm-hmm. The OT did help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Public school system in the Philippines is really, really bad. And even the private school system, they don't offer a lot of services for kids with disabilities. So
okay.
I had to look for a private place for their OT.
Is it easy to find that over there?
God, no.
Okay.
No. But because I quit my job, I had a lot of time mm-hmm. to do research. And I found one probably like less than a mile from where I lived. And it helped them a lot. I scheduled them like twice a week because they were still not in school age. So I scheduled them twice a week, 1 hour each. Because of that private OT, they stopped the hyperactivity. I was able to have a good conversation with Virgil. He was finally able to speak back to me and reply, not just repeat what I said.
Okay.
To reply, and David started talking.
Oh, okay. Well, that's awesome.
I don't know what magic they did.
It's not magic. It's the early intervention. It really does help.
I saw them on Facebook, the place uh-huh. where the boys used to go for OT.
Uh-huh.
And I gave them an update. Like, you know, I even sent them pictures. This is who they are now. And they were so happy. So we keep in touch.
Oh, that's great.
I owe a lot to them. Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I pay them for their, you know, for their services.
Right.
But without them, you know, we wouldn't have started.
Right.
For their independence.
Well, with David, I mean, because you have two sons with ASD. I mean, were you able, do you think you picked up on it a little bit earlier? Maybe. I know you said they were diagnosed at 3, but I mean, what made you think that he might have, I know you said there was grunting, right?
Yes.
But was it easier to accept or?
Oh my God, it was not. I was in denial. Because you know, mostly Filipinos are Catholic. So, you know, we have the fear of God. But during that time, I blamed God. Like, what did I ever do to deserve this? Like, I didn't do anything bad my whole life. I tried to do the right thing. And during my pregnancy, I did not do anything that I'm not allowed to do. Then why does my kids have this? And not just one, the both of them. So I was so much in denial that every time I cried, I would blame God. I would even cuss at God.
Oh my gosh.
That's how bitter the pain. I was. Yes.
Yeah, the pain. And, you know, you were raising your sons on your own while your husband was here in the United States?
Yes. So he was here 2004. We didn't follow him till like 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, because we waited for our visa.
Right. So would they started pre-K there then also? And
Virgil was able to go to school there.
Okay.
In a private school that offer special education services. But again, that special education services, they don't even have therapies, you know, it's not included. So they just probably like specialize one-on-one for kids. Virgil was able to attend kindergarten back home.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, around March, we finally received the visa. So we scheduled flying out here during the May 2006.
Okay.
So David was not able to go to school there. We because he wasn't going to school, I just upped his OT therapy.
Occupational therapy.
From 2 days a week to 3 days a week. That way, at least, you know, he would be also learning. Because they helped him there with fine motor skills, gross motor skills.
Mm-hmm.
Before he wasn't able to use a scissor to cut papers. Again, I don't know what they did. Now we can do everything by the time we went in here. And he was even speaking, but just little words, not complete sentences.
Do you think they have, you know, just from what you saw when Virgil was younger in school, so do they have a type of special ed program like they do here? You said it's kind of one-on-one, so it's not inclusive then? Inclusive
learning?
It's not
an inclusion class.
Okay.
Class, I think, consisted of at least 12 kids. They're just 12 kids.
Hmm.
His class is the one that opened my eyes. And in that class, I think that they have 5 teachers. So it's a ratio of 5:12. That's not very bad.
Mm-hmm.
5 teachers for 12 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I have met a lot of very severely autistic kids, kids with cerebral palsy,
right?
Kids with some physical deformity. So after seeing that class, I wasn't bitter anymore. I was thankful that my son doesn't have a severe disability as they have.
Right.
And my talking, some are nonverbal, so... So that was it changed me 360 degrees from here to being thankful.
Well, because you have 2 children with ASD. So that's a lot of strain on you also.
Yeah.
You know,
it was. And then your family is in denial too. They don't want me to bring my dad didn't want me to bring the boys to OT because he said, oh, those doctors are just, you know, squeezing you for money, blah, blah, blah. They're in denial that the kids need it.
So. Oh my gosh.
It was hard.
Yeah. It's a cultural thing, right, yes. Millie? I mean, I'm Filipino, so I understand what Millie's talking about.
The stigma to it.
Yes. Yes. There is a stigma. in the Filipino culture.
Plus, a lot of people, close-minded Filipino, would call mm-hmm. them abnoy or abnormal. Mm-hmm. They don't see the difference between a person with disability versus a person who's not normal. For them, mm-hmm. they're just not normal, period. Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
They only have one category, normal and not normal.
Right, right. So, yeah, that's
so it was very hard to tell people. So I was very, very picky for people that I tell that what my kids have. Mm-hmm. So I don't trust them because you know how gossip is. Like, oh, yeah. Do you know that Millie's kids have this, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I want my kids to.
Well, you don't need the negativity. You need to, like, you know, stay positive.
Support.
Keep,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, support. So
yes.
I just didn't tell people. I didn't care.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. Yeah. And so when you were planning on coming here to the U.S., you had already told your husband, you know, you told them about your son's diagnoses. And how are you? Because when I first met you, I was like, wow, you have like overcome so many barriers.
Oh my God. I did.
Yes. And I'm just so in awe of you.
Tears. Everything's not.
How did you know who to call first to get you know, to get the services that you needed for the boys?
Well, it started with confirming their diagnoses first, because mm-hmm. before we started services, I wanted to make sure that the diagnosis that was given back home would be the same, because it's different. So my husband did his due diligence here as well, so uh-huh. he knew that Kennedy Krieger is the best one for people with disabilities.
Okay.
So we scheduled an appointment with Kennedy Krieger, and they did confirm that the diagnosis back home was correct.
Okay.
So, and then during checkout, you know, when you do checkout, I asked someone there, so where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm.
How do we start services? One of the ladies there heard me when I was asking the receptionist, and she said, oh, you know what? You need to go through Child Find Services. And she gave me the number for Child Find Services. Apparently, this place is who will direct you to the right services for your kids based on where you live.
Oh.
So, yeah. As soon as she gave me the number, while my husband's driving, I called them right away.
Okay.
And they referred me to a person. I think she's a psychologist with Baltimore County Public Schools. And we started off from there. My kids get an initial full assessment, educational, psychological, cognitive, all those assessments from, I forgot her name, but she's an official psychologist for the Baltimore County Public Schools. And from her diagnosis, the boys were referred to, you know, we have to have a zone school from where you live. So mm-hmm. we did not go to our zone school.
Okay.
They were referred to certain specialized elementary schools that offer services for their disability. So Virgil was sent to Fort Garrison Elementary, and David was sent to Summit Park Elementary. David started off kindergarten there, and Virgil started off first grade.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, they're 2 years apart, but educationally, they're just 1 year apart, because that's how the county, the public school
placed them,
yes.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. They started off there. And then Virgil, after 1 year at Fort Garrison, I think he was also in an inclusion class. And I have met a lot of his classmates. They're definitely worse off than him. They can't write. Some of them are nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I felt very, very grateful.
Right.
And right. Some, I've met a lot of parents who rely solely on the school system. No. The help that is provided to your child should start from home. You don't rely on other people. You rely on yourself first. And then some of the parents would even be depressed because they have one kid with disability. Hey, I have two, and that's my normal. Be grateful.
Right. Well, I think it's just so hard because you don't know, as a parent, I didn't know where to go to learn about the different resources. And I think that's the thing. It's like not having like a central location. And when your child is younger, you're a young mom and, you know, you're going through this and you know, you're just trying to make it day by day, right? Help them with homework, you know, help them like
one of the things that I discovered during partners. I was so surprised learning that in other counties, they didn't have the people didn't have the knowledge or people didn't get help the way we were helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very, I felt sorry because why? These kids need help. From the moment they were diagnosed, the doctor should have at least told them, okay, you need to go to this. You need your child. Like in the city, I know if a child was diagnosed early on, mm-hmm. I think between 0 age to 5, they're already referred to infants and toddlers program.
Right.
City. And then I think for a certain age, they go through that from then on. So that's a good step. The infants and toddlers program is a good first step.
Right, right.
And then they already know where to go the next. I appreciated that person that told me about Child Find Services because without that, we wouldn't know where to go.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. I only learned about it through you. So that's what I mean.
I'm not sure if it's statewide. But okay. I'm not sure if it's statewide, but it's definitely in Baltimore County. Mm-hmm. I do have friends in here who are also Filipino who have kids with disabilities. And they don't know where to go. And I told them, the school should have informed you where to go. I have a friend who has a Down syndrome daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter with Down syndrome. She only has an IEP in school. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I told her, oh my God, you could get more than that. I told her about DDA, but they're not doing anything. So
yeah.
I can't help any.
Right. Well, speaking of school, when do you think the boys noticed they were different from their peers? I mean, did you talk to them at an early age about ASD or?
Yes, maybe around 10 years old. However, they did not notice that they're different from the others.
Okay.
They just know that they didn't even notice the color of the skin. You know, when my son was telling me stories about like kids in school. Okay. Is this child Caucasian or? American, and what's that, mom? I mean, are they white or black? No, they don't know color. And I love that.
Right.
Love that because they just see these kids as kids.
Yeah.
No difference in them. So they never saw themselves as different. However, I did notice that other kids, you know, whenever they have events at school, I would notice kids see them different.
Uh-huh.
Like, classmates would have a birthday, I would see that other kids are invited to the birthday and not my kids. So
yeah,
that
I understand
a lot. That hurt.
I know. Right.
And I think it's their parents' job to let their kids know that, hey, we don't treat other kids that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Treat them equally. But then again, it's I think it's a parenting thing. So anyway, I lost my train of thought.
Okay. Well, the thing is, you said you told them that when they were 10 years old.
Yes.
And
10 years old, yes.
How did you explain it to them?
I told them that you have this thing called ASDs, autism spectrum disorder, or mm-hmm. it used to be called Asperger syndrome, but now I think the official term has been changed to just.
Yeah. That's what my son has also.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because they said, because of the wide array in the spectrum of autism, mm-hmm. there is no one who has the same. So that's mm-hmm. why they said it's autism spectrum disorder. I told them it's not a disease. It doesn't have a cure. You will have it for the rest of your life, but it is what makes you special. It makes you unique and own it.
Yeah.
You have it. It doesn't have you. So if someone asks you, hey, Virgil, or hey, David, why do you act so weird? Tell them the truth. Well, I have autism spectrum disorder. If I do something or say something that may have been offensive to you, please let me know. Because one of the things that I struggle with is social cues.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very honest. So sometimes, you know, with people with autism, they're so honest to a point that they can't even filter what they say. They'll just tell you what's right off the bat of their mind.
Right. Yeah.
But you just have to let people know that you have it that way in their own way. They can understand you. Again, if you own it, if you embrace it, it can't be used against you. because I was protecting them before from that, because in the Philippines they would get bullied. But once in here, I realized, no, I can't protect them forever. They need to know how to protect themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So I told them, own it. If people ask you, tell them right off the bat, I have autism spectrum disorder.
Right.
If I may have said something that could have offended you, let me know. And I do apologize, please. So I know in Pathfinders for Autism, they even distribute like cards. Like, that, hey, I have this so-and-so, I do this, I say this, so please try to understand I have autism spectrum disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When they were younger, I didn't have that yet.
And it helps them, you know, at a young age, learn to start advocating for themselves too, right?
Yeah. Yes, yes. And even it helped them with their essay, applying for college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, admitting that they have autism spectrum disorder helped them a lot. In their application for college, in the essays that are required.
Right, right. Yeah, my son also, when he applied to college, he also wrote about
the journey.
Autism spectrum and his journey also in his college essay. So.
It's hard for us parents. Imagine what they feel. You know, I try to put myself in their shoes. Like, how does it feel when you're at an age when you should be having lots of friends?
Mm-hmm.
And my kids, they're best friends with each other. So I feel bad because when I was their age, I have friends, you know, especially high school.
Uh-huh.
But because of what they have, kids tend to just avoid them. And I think it's just the way these kids were raised, the sensitivity to the uniqueness of other people. They were not... These were not explained to them. So I told myself and I told my kids, don't worry, the right time will come. Your true friend will arrive. It's just not as early as now, but they are there.
Right, right.
The person who will be with you when you have nothing to offer and when you're at your downest time, that is your true friend.
Yes, that's what I tell my son too, or not just my son, but you know, I have three kids. So all my kids,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
And I told them to be very, very smart in choosing your friends because, you know, that age, kids like to want to be accepted. They all want to be accepted. And at an early age, I've already told them, do not be a victim of peer pressure. No, 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 no. If you want to be a friend of someone and he told you to do something else or you won't be part of our group, then yeah, you don't need them. You don't need them because we don't want them to be victims of peer pressure. Peer pressure could drive kids to do such things, you know, like shoplifting. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I told them your friend would come in the right time.
Exactly.
Right now, as long as you have each other, as long as you can deal with other people in a civil way, for now, I think that should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're not very awkward with other people, because they're not.
Right. I mean, and you know, just getting them ready for college. I mean, did you start teaching them life skills early on?
Oh gosh, life skills. I started early.
Uh-huh.
Probably when they were in third grade. We started with folding their own clothes after laundry.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them, okay, it's mommy's job to wash the laundry, to wash your clothes. However, because that's not just mommy's job in the house, you need to help out. So after I'm done with the laundry, you fold it yourselves. I taught them how to fold, put it in their cabinets. It started there. And then fixing their bed after, you know, in the morning. And then I think the next one was setting the table, you know, helping me set the table. And now I don't do anything at all.
Before
I used to do a lot. Now I just do things, I think, like cooking, you know.
Uh-huh, right.
I'm not a big fan of cooking, but I will only cook if there's no more any other choice.
That's funny.
Yes, so I will cook.
Yeah. But
my kids, they cook the rice because you know how we always eat rice. They set up the table. They make sure that before we eat, there's drinks in there. Everything's there. And then after eating, my husband and I would just go to the family room and watch TV. My kids would clear the table, wash the dishes, My Virgil takes care of the needs of the dog. David takes care of the needs of the cat.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
David does our laundry every Friday and Saturday. I don't even do laundry anymore.
So I started teaching my kids also. I taught them a little later, but like fifth, sixth grade, they started doing their laundry, putting away their clothes, started teaching them cooking skills. Okay. Yes. And, you know, and vacuuming, cleaning the house. So they each, you know, each time, like I increase, you know, the life skills that they need to know. But I think they think, oh, mom, you know, we have to learn all this. I wonder how many of my friends are doing this. And you know what? After we finish this interview, I'm going to let them listen to this recording and and I'll say, see, you're not the only ones doing this.
They would ask me too, mom, why do we have to do this? Because this is something you need to do in order to live every day.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to learn this at an early age. That way, you're already at an age that it, like later on in your life, it comes easy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to struggle like, oh my God, I got to do laundry again. No, because it becomes second nature.
Exactly.
You've been doing it your whole life.
Yeah.
And then when they say, I'm, you know what you just mentioned, I wonder if my friends are doing this too. What I would tell them, I don't care about them. They're not my kids.
I
know. You are my kids.
So right.
But whatever they do with their lives, I don't care.
You're funny, Millie. But
I wanted you to be able to say to your future wives that you can do everything that they can.
Exactly.
Except give birth.
Yeah, right.
So that you know, yeah, that even if your wives are not with you, you can still live and not live as a, you know, like the typical man, like you'd all be slobby in there or you won't be able to eat. No, you need to learn everything.
Exactly.
Everything that a girl does in the house, you gotta learn.
Right. So I did a little research and I found that on average, caring for an ASD child costs about $60,000 a year through childhood, with the majority of the costs in special services and lost wages that are related to increased demands on parents. So that puts a lot of economic and emotional strain on families. And I've talked to some parents that spend over $100,000 a year. Like I think the last person I talked to, she said it was like $180,000 a year for her child. And I'll say that again. Her child. Millie, you and your husband have two sons with ASD. So I'd like to take this time so we can talk about some programs that, you know, can help some parents.
Yes.
Every little bit helps, right?
So yes. And you just, all you need to do is just don't be afraid. Don't be shy to ask for assistance. Hey, what do I do if I need this? If you're afraid to ask, Google something like I need services.
Uh-huh.
A child with disability, and you know how the internet is. It gives you lots of options. You just need to know where to go first.
That's the hard part. But yeah. Since I have you, your attention right now, can you explain what the autism waiver is? And I know the autism waiver, we talk about the autism waiver in Maryland, but I think there are also waivers in different states, yes. Right? Across the states, right? Yeah.
Under Maryland, we have what we call the DDA, Developmental Disabilities Administration. And under DDA, they provide services through waivers. The autism waiver is just one of it.
Okay.
We don't work with people under the autism waiver. We do work under the Community Pathways waiver, Community Supports Waiver, and the Family Supports Waiver. The Autism Waiver is just one of those. And the Autism Waiver is a service that the state provides with, it starts with kids, with children with disability. And it is a part of the Maryland HCBS. It stands for Home and Community-Based Services.
Okay.
So for children with ASD, it allows children with ASD to receive specific waiver services like respite care. Respite meaning if your primary caregiver, you know, let's say you and you have a child with autism and you're already reached your point like, oh my God, I'm so tired, I need a break. That's when respite care comes in. Respite meaning you can hire someone to take care of your child while you need a break. Let's say you need a week's break, you need a vacation just to clear your mind, refresh your body. Respite care is what you would need. And then aside from respite care, environmental accessibility adaptation. Let's say your house doesn't have a ramp. Mm-hmm. If your child is in the autism waiver, they will provide your house. They will have a contractor build a ramp at your house. That's why I told you, you know, when you miss the autism waiver, you miss a lot of services.
Right. And can you tell us
a lot of services on the autism waiver? And that's also that I just mentioned to you.
Right. And the thing is, you were also on a waiting list, right, for the autism waiver. But can you share with us what happened?
Let me finish the services that a person can get.
So aside from
adaptation, family consultation, like if you need some therapy for the whole family, residential habilitation. Mm-hmm. Let's say your child wants to move out of your house and wants to live in a group home or a residential service part that your child wants. You can have that in there as well. Intensive individual support services, therapeutic integration if they need therapy, and adult life planning. So those are just one of the common things that you can get from the autism waiver. And in partner with autism waiver, you also get Medicaid services. Medicaid is the same term as medical assistance. It's part of the medical services that the state provides, which would include physician and hospital care, pharmacy, home health, laboratory services, disposable medical supplies, like if your child needs diapers, mm-hmm. you provide that too, durable medical equipment, medical health services, payment for premiums, copays, and deductibles for when they go to the doctor. Children that are eligible are from ages 2 to 21. If the child is from 2 to 21, they can apply. Okay. And there are a lot of requirements. With my own experience, when after child find services also advise us to register for the autism waiver services.
Okay.
So we did that right away. We called the Autism Registry Center. It's the Autism Registry Center. And I think we were in the 300 number of waiting lists. I can't remember if it's 300 or the 800 because, you know, they kind of look alike. Mm-hmm. So we waited for 8 years.
Yeah, talk about a barrier to services. 8 years.
Yes. So that's where the long line was. We never had to wait too long for DDA services. Uh-huh. Because the earlier you register your child at the DDA services, the better. Mm-hmm. But when they become adult, that's when there's a long line for adults. However, for children, it's I think they sign them up right away. So anyways, we were waiting for the waiver. No one told me. If I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't have to go through this, but no one told me that the kids would have a current IEP. My kids were doing so fine at school. The goal for the IEP is educational improvement or at least stability. But my kids were all getting straight A's. So the school recommended that they'd be taken off IEP and just be placed on a 504 plan. 504 plan is kind of like an IEP, but just accommodations mm-hmm. that they would need at school. So again, no one told me, no one advised me against it, that it wouldn't be, you know, that they wouldn't be in the autism waiver if they don't have IEP anymore. So I said yes. And then after, I think they were taken off IEP after they finished middle school. So,
oh my gosh, right.
So freshman high school, the autism waiver finally called me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, I was jumping for joy. Because I know what the autism waiver can give my kids once they're in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that person that called me is from someone from the Department of Education. Apparently, the autism waiver and the Department of Education work hand in hand. So she was telling me the requirements, and when I heard about the IEP, I told her, I can't lie. I had to tell her, well, my kids were just taken off IEP because they were doing well in school. They get straight A's. And right now they're only in a 504 plan. And she said, oh, unfortunately, we cannot push through with this if they don't have an IEP anymore. Apparently, an IEP is a very, very important requirement for the autism waiver.
Right.
So I lost it. I lost after waiting 8 years.
Yeah, and you didn't even know.
Yes, and I didn't even know. That's why if I knew now, if I knew then what we knew now, especially with rights law, that class we took for rights law, I would probably, they would probably have it now.
Mm-hmm.
So having the right information helps a lot.
Right.
Yeah, no one told me. But I had to look at it as on a positive note, like instead of a water half empty to a water half full. Mm-hmm. I just told myself, I think I can see that my kids are capable of living a normal life in the future. Maybe other kids with severe autism need this more than my kids do.
Right. Exactly. So
that's how.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. You don't have a choice.
Right.
You have to accept it.
Right.
So that's how we lost it.
Well, I think I read some place too that the waivers, they're waivers specifically for autism. So Maryland's one of the states, but I think also Colorado, Indiana, and Wisconsin. I think those are the other states that have specific autism waivers. But you probably need to double check with, you know, for the listeners out there, you know, because there's ARCs throughout the U.S. So maybe they could like
they could
guide you.
And that is one good resource. Mm-hmm. If you're just starting out and you have a child with a disability and you don't know where to go, the best place to go, if you're in Maryland, yes, the ARC. We have lots of ARC in Maryland. We have at least 8 chapters of ARC in Maryland. If not, we also have the PPMD, you know, the Parents Place of Maryland.
Right.
You can ask them, what do I need to do first? They will guide you.
Right.
And
but I think it's
so lucky we didn't have that before.
I didn't know about Parents Place of Maryland. I didn't know about Pathfinders for autism, you know, and where do you find this information? Right. I think it's part of it is word of mouth. You talk to other parents. I mean, thankfully now you can Google things, but. Yeah.
Just type in autism, you Google it, and it's a lot of places.
Right. And then you could easily be overwhelmed with that. And you're, as a parent, you're already feeling bogged down with so much. It's like you're trying to make sense of so many things. And, you know, you want somebody as like a mentor to help, you know, guide you.
Yeah. That's why, let's say you contacted someone from the ARC or PPMD, it's good that you have. Find out information about that person.
Mm-hmm.
You befriend them better. That way you always have this someone to go to person. Like, I have a question about this. I have to call so-and-so, you know, because
mm-hmm.
They are well-versed in that. And when you just said, you know, just trying to, you just mentioned trying to make sense of what's going on. Nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially for a person, if you have a child with disability, it doesn't make sense at all. That especially when you were pregnant with that kid and you did all the right things, you took all the right vitamins, through all prenatal, whatever else, and then they come out like that with certain unique abilities. That's what I call that. Sometimes I would even call it their superpower.
Yeah.
They're so good at math. My son is so good at math that he's, in fact, Virgil. It's so bad that he's, in fact, a tutor at Towson University right now with math.
Oh, really? That's so cool. Oh, my gosh. That's really cool.
He's got a part-time job tutoring math.
Oh, that's really cool.
So sometimes I would call it their superpower. Do not think of your autism as something negative. It is a positive thing. It's actually like it worked on their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
David is so good at writing essays. Whenever I would read his essays when he was applying for college, I was like, oh my God, is this my son? I would even have to go find a dictionary or the dictionary app on the phone. What does this word mean? I had no idea he had extensive vocabulary when before he doesn't even talk.
Well, was he more hyper-focused with like reading or something? Do you think that's...
He likes to read only on things that interest him. Like right now he's so into World War II, a history buff, and geography. Like if I'm doing crossword puzzle and I need, what is the capital of so-and-so country? I ask him, he knows right off the bat. Like, what is this country in the southern whatever place of in Europe? He knows it. He likes maps. He even draws maps. So his interests are not the same kids his age. He does have a few of them, like, you know, computer games, but his interest with history, whenever he's watching TV, he'd be on the history channel. He'd be on the military channel because of World War II. He's so into World War II. That's probably why he can't build rapport with other kids his age, because they have different interests.
Different interests. Right. Well, you and I have talked about the low intensity support services in Maryland, or it's also called LIS. Yes. We talked about it in the past, and I never heard of it. Again, it's something I never heard of until I met you. And I wish I met you when I was younger and my son was younger.
I wish I'd worked at the ARC earlier, because I never have learned of all these things if I hadn't worked with the ARC. So, well, LIS is only given. It's another DDA service. So your child has to be under DDA service. It's another DDA service for people who do not receive any kind of waiver services under the DDA. So my kids were in a waiver before. However, you would be in the waiver. There's three categories that they consider: crisis resolution, crisis prevention, and supports only. They were in the waiver because when we came into DDA, they were put already under crisis resolution. However, over the course of the years, we have a service coordinator service coordinators are liaison, or it's a CCS. They're called CCSs now, Coordinator of Community Services.
With the LIS program, or is that with
this with DDA.
With DDA, so, okay. Yes.
So if you have if you're receiving services with DDA, they assigned a CCS for you.
Okay.
So those service coordinators would check on you every quarter, and then you would have a meeting once a year. It's kind of like the IEP in school.
Okay.
But it was IEP, and now it's even called person-centered plan. So anyways, these service coordinators, or the CCSs, would report to the state that, okay, this is Virgil's and David's situation right now. They're doing okay. They live with their parents. So from crisis resolution to crisis prevention, they were put into supports only category. And when you go to the supports only category, you don't receive even the CCSS services anymore.
Okay.
So the only service you're eligible of when you're in the supports only category is the LIS. That's the only thing you can get funding from.
Uh-huh.
And LIS is, it can provide you with a maximum of $2,000 per fiscal year. Fiscal year starts July 1st of every year and ends June 30th of the following year. So for the fiscal year of July, they have a round one and round two application.
Okay.
Round one application is every May 1st. Round one application is every May 1st to June 30th. Of every year.
Okay.
And then round two application is every July 1st to November 30th of every year. So they have what they call the random selection process. It's kind of like a drawing.
Like a lottery.
Yes, like a lottery. Okay. So you submit your paperwork. Before we submit the paper, now there's an online form now that you can fill up under the DDA website. You just type in their search LIS. If your name gets chosen, you receive a packet. You'll receive a letter that, hey, congratulations, you've been selected for the random selection process. And then there's another form you got to fill up. And it will have, you need to write in there the kind of service that you want to avail of. Well, for LIS, they have the following services. Adaptive or specialized equipment. Again, it could be a wheelchair, it could be a ramp that you need in your house. As long as it doesn't go over $2,000, you can get it, because there is a max of $2,000. There's assistive technology. This is the one that I always avail of for the boys.
Okay.
When they were selected, before they went to college, I got them both MacBooks from LIS. And it's always been, so far we've gotten two. We've been chosen twice. And it's always been the two of them, you know, when they,
wow.
Yes, I've always been lucky. It's the two of them are always chosen the same time.
Well, when you apply, and you know, with the documentation, since your boys are in college, you know, they don't really, I don't think they have an IEP, right? Well, you already dropped the IEP a long time ago. So for proof of the intellectual and developmental disability, do you just provide a letter from the Disability Resource Center, or do you have to, how do you?
They would definitely ask for a proof of disability.
Uh-huh.
And once a year, I would try to get an appointment with Candy Krieger just to check where they are now.
Like, okay,
in terms of how they're progressing, and I would always make sure that I give the latest paperwork we get from Kennedy Krieger.
Right. Okay. So that's what I, you know, one thing that our listeners would want to know.
Yes.
You know, you need current. You would need like a current documentation.
Places they could go. It's aside from Kennedy Krieger, there's also the Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital. That's for kids, for children. For supports only category, it's mostly adults. So, but if you still, you know, any kind of paperwork would help.
But even your doctor, your primary?
Yes, even your primary, as long as your primary is informed of the diagnosis, yes. And if it's, you can even ask your primary doctor to put it in there. Let's say you'd had your child's annual physical exam.
Right.
You can ask your doctor to add a little bit about the diagnosis and, that would help as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's a document that explains the diagnosis. Yes, they would accept that.
Oh, okay. Perfect. But yeah, so it's like, that's good to know. Cause like I said, I didn't even know about that until I spoke with you. There's so many services, like different programs that I'm sure a lot of parents out there are like, wait, I never heard of this too.
Yes. Yes. And, It has helped me a lot. It saved me a lot of money because instead of getting from my own, you know, getting from our budget, getting computers for college, they gave it to me. And let's say you didn't know if you get chosen, so you bought a computer for your child. As long as it goes inside the fiscal year, start of the fiscal year is July 1st. Let's say you bought it July 2nd, you can reimburse it through LIS if you get selected.
Wait, say that one more time.
You can reimburse. Let's say you didn't know you submitted your LIS application for May,
right?
And you didn't know if you got chosen, and you didn't want to wait. You have to buy a computer for your child for school,
right? Okay.
So if you purchased it after July 1st, which is the start of the fiscal year, and then you got chosen, you got selected for the LIS, they can reimburse you.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just very important. It's very important. So if you're going to buy it, make sure that it's after July 1st because they follow a certain fiscal
year. Well, how did you go from parent advocate to working at the ARC?
Oh, goodness. That's a good story. When I was doing my research, you know, for all the benefits that I could, you know, take advantage of and avail of for the kids, I've discovered this education series that the ARC Baltimore offers.
Uh-huh.
I haven't worked for them yet, but the education series that I attended is all about how to be able to get into the autism waiver. So
from
6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on certain days at the ARC Baltimore, and I attended that. And so you have to register, so they have my email. So after they have my email, I started receiving news from them. And then I think after 2 months or 3 months, I received an email about a job fair. And the kids are already good at school, you know, like they don't need me, like, you know, with other kids when they go to school and I want my mommy. So no, they don't. I didn't go through that too. When they're the first day of school, they were fine. We didn't need to be there.
Uh-huh.
So I thought maybe I could try working for them and maybe learn a few things. So I applied on the date that they have on the email, and I got a job in their employment division as a job coach. So
okay,
a job coach is a job under the category of a DSP, which stands for Direct Support Professional. So a job coach job, I was an independent job coach because we have different kinds of job coaches. I was an independent job coach, and I made sure that the people with disability are people that we support that work in the community as an independent job, like Home Depot or Panera. They work there. They're getting paid by the company, not through the ARC.
Okay.
So I just have to make sure that I check on them, make sure their rights are being respected. They're not being used or taken advantage of. They're being paid properly, you know, the same as the other people. As long as those are good, we're good. I just need to check on them at least once a week. So it's a good job. I just do a lot of driving because I had an individual who works at Fort Meade. Mm-hmm. Which is so far. And the only time I can check in on her is at 7 a.m. in the morning. So, yeah, as early as 5, I'm already on the road to go to Fort Meade because it takes a while to go through security. But so, because it's a base. So, you have to, it's the NSA. So, yeah, and then this person, at least, fortunately, she only wants to be seen once a month. I am required to see all of them once a week. But for people who have been doing well at their jobs or have been at their jobs for a long time, they only want to be checked on like once a month. But if there are problems, I had one guy who was being bullied by a coworker. The coworker on their organizational chart put the photo of a dog on top of his face. So he clearly sees this person with disability as a dog.
Didn't
stop until this guy was fired because it's just not right.
That's right. That's wrong. That's so wrong. Right.
And this person just took it. The person that we support, he just took it. When he just couldn't take it anymore, he told me, Miss Millie, this person that I work with, blah, 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 blah. He put a photo of a dog on top of my photo and it really hurts my feelings. I think that the photo of a dog has been there for 2 weeks now. And even the people he works with didn't even react to it. His supervisor didn't react to it.
Oh my gosh.
Until he told me. So no, this should not happen. This should not happen to you. You do not deserve this. So I made a report. We can even write a report. We have two incident reports. One is internal, like within just the ARC, and another is a reportable incident report, which I report to the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a reportable incident report. I reported it to the state, and that's when they started an investigation.
Well, how does somebody find a job coach then? Like, how do they know?
They are assigned.
Oh, okay.
So let's say I have 33 people when I was a job coach. Because I was categorized an independent job coach, majority of the people in my caseload are the ones that are working independently.
Okay.
Because we also have people that work in enclaves. It's like a group of 10 or a group of 5, a group of whatever, and they go to a site, let's say ABC Elementary School. They go to that elementary school, they have one job coach, and let's say they have 5 in a group, and they just do janitorial jobs in there.
Okay.
If they start at 9, they end at 1, and then that's it. But I'm not that kind of job coach. Mine is just an independent one. I don't pick up those kind of job coach. They will pick up their supported individuals in their houses. They have a van. They have a company van that they use to pick up the individuals. And then after they picked up all, she picks up or he picked up all of the individuals that she works with, they would go to the work site, finish their job, and then she brings them all home. And then she returns the van to the office. So that's the enclave kind of job. But mine is the individual. So I just have to make sure that they are, they don't have any issues at work. And if they have any issues at work, I always advise them, do not wait for when I come to you. Call me right away and we have to nip it in the bud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and then we set up goals. You know how it is with IEP. We set up goals. So we make sure that their goals that were set up during their meeting, I track that through monthly progress reports. And the monthly progress reports, I submit to their case manager.
Okay.
Okay. So I did that for 3 years and I was promoted to a case manager. So now I work with lots of job coaches on that work with the people that I support. I have 62 people now in my case.
You're busy.
Yeah, 62. Because when, let's say someone, hey, Millie, did you hear about so-and-so? What happened to so-and-so? What? Okay, so let's say John Doe. Oh my God, who is John Doe again? I have to think.
Mm-hmm.
Work. I have to go back because it's a lot of people to keep track of.
Right, right, right.
And each of them have quarterly reports that I have to do. So if they, and the quarterly reports is based on their meeting dates. So let's say January 2, someone had a meeting. So February, March, April 2nd, I have to do his quarterly report, his first quarterly report. And they all have different dates of meetings, 62 of them. So I have to monitor quarterly dates for all 62 of them.
Wow.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a lot.
Yeah.
Well, what words of wisdom would you like to share with us, parents, grandparents, siblings, caregivers?
I always tell this to anyone. We are not any different from people with disabilities. We're all the same. We have physical needs. We have biological needs. We want companionship. We all have feelings. They're the same. So why treat them differently? You know, they have the same rights as all of us. Them having a disability doesn't make them any less of a person. Again, they're the same as us. They want to be as independent as we were when we were younger. Like, I want to move out of mom. I don't want mom to always nag me with what I need. They want the same thing. They would not be given a chance to become as independent as they want to be if they're not given the chance to have a job. That's why we always advocate for people we support. Hey, this person, despite his disability, he can do this, he can do that, he can do this. So we need to treat them like how we would treat any other person. If you want to be independent, okay, we'll help you out. We'll let you learn how to fly on your own. We'll let you make your own mistakes and learn from them. Mm-hmm. And then also for adult ones, we should not treat them like a child.
Right.
For
right.
People with disabilities, adult with disabilities, you talk to them as an adult. Because we see other people talk to them like they're children.
Right.
Children.
Well, I that's right. Because, you know, I tell my kids, or I say, you know, I'll help you. I'll work with you. But I'm not going to work for you. I'm not going to do it for you.
No. Yes. And I think the world is a much better place with them in it. They add heart to the world because they're very innocent. Even if they're already an adult, they're very innocent. They're very pure hearted. I think the world is a much better place and more beautiful with them in it. They, if we are always yelling for equality, they need it more.
They exactly.
need that equality more. We should not treat them any different. They are the same as us. Everything, top to bottom, they're the same as us.
Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you so much, Millie, for sharing your story and knowledge to help educate and empower us. We wish you and your family all the very best. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.